So we're talking about creation. Any of you recognize a suitcase like this? Why are some of you laughing? Old suitcase. In the 60s? 50s. I have a suitcase like this that I used to carry that my mother gave to my father on her first anniversary. First birthday after they were married. So how many years ago was that?
Oh, 61.
Okay. This, to the kids I come to see, represents fun. Represents fun. Let me show you why. Toys. We have all kinds of things in here. We have Mario. Story behind Mario. I found him when I was walking one day in the evening, and he was just laying there in the street perfectly clean. I thought, man, I'm going to take him and run him through the wash, and I put him in my suitcase. So when these foster kids I go to see in their home, they ask me about Mario, and I tell them the story. And a lot of these kids, they have the same reality. They feel like they've been tossed aside. So now they can look at Mario. Also, we have in here, what is that? Kind of hard to throw, isn't it? You remember it?
Like a hacky sack with hair.
Hacky sack with hair. When's the last time you played with a slinky? Last time you saw
it. As guys are going up the escalator, that was coming down the
What can you do with a slinky?
Have fun.
Have fun. Absolutely. What's the purpose of these toys? Fun? To create relationship with these children that I go to see. As a therapist, when I go into these foster homes and work with these children, you have to enter their world. You have to enter their experience. If I go there and I sit down with this six-year-old and I say, okay, let's talk about your life. Let's see. You've been in foster care for a month now, and you see your mom and dad every other week. And what is that going to mean to them? Nothing. Absolutely nothing. But this has meaning. This has meaning. Why? They can relate to it. They can create meaning in their own world with it. So we're talking about creation. So I have three volunteers. You're a volunteer? Okay, I need two more. You're a volunteer? Okay, I've got three volunteers. I'd like you to sit down and create something. Okay, just enjoy creating. Just do it while we're talking. Create something. Now, it's interesting to think about creation. How do you create something from nothing? How do you do that? You don't know. I was heard the other day about Boeing, and they talked about this new airplane and how it's been made from scratch. And we were laughing and saying, what do you mean made from scratch? I thought the Wright brothers did that. It's been built on. But to create from nothing boggles our minds because we're in a finite world. We're finite. The infinite knows how to create from nothing. We know how to create. We're creative. We're created by a creator. Therefore, we're creative. And we have the ability to create. But from nothing. Enjoying that, Angela? Look at her face. It's kind of fun, isn't it? Okay, so you're in the process of creating right now as you're taking that Play-Doh. And that's an interesting story, this Play-Doh I chose, because I went to see this one boy I've seen for about a year, and he's in this group home, and he said, "I've got a present for you, Dr. Doss." I said, "Oh, okay." He ran in this room, and he came out, and he had this, "Yes, I got something for you and something for your case." And he had this little case that you open, and there was a pen inside with a little calculator, and he was so thrilled. He said, "I knew you'd love it." And I, you know, "Oh, this is great. I knew you'd love it." He said, "Here, this is for your case." Open it up, and there was these four little Play-Dohs. Usually I have a bigger can of Play-Doh, but there are these little ones. He said, "Oh, isn't that perfect for your case?" He was thrilled because of what was happening to him and giving me something. So that Play-Doh was a present because of what happened to him in the relationship. So when you think of creation, and let me move this out of the way here. When you think of creation, this earth, we were created and given wonderful things in this earth so that we could enjoy ourselves and enjoy God. What a wonderful representation. This boy gave me something because of something happening in his life through our relationship of play that we've had, and he's been in I've seen him in three different foster facilities. So this is the third one. And one time he said to me, "You're the one I've seen the most. You're the one I've seen the longest. I've been in three different group foster homes, but you're the..." So I mean, I'm thinking, that was a relationship. He gave out of an experience that we've created together. So let's go down to talk about creation of this world. You know, it's phenomenal. I do not have really grasped how God can speak, and out of it comes all of this firmament. He separates the water from the waters. It's phenomenal. But yet we read in this, and I believe it. And yet it's interesting to look at how David talks about this. David in Psalms 104 says, "Bless the Lord, O soul, O Lord my God, thou art very great. Thou art clothed with splendor and majesty, covering thyself with light as with a cloak, stretching out heaven like a tent curtain." Now this is David describing creation. "He lays the beams of his upper chambers in the waters. He makes the clouds his chariot. He walks with the wings of the wind. He makes the winds of his messengers, flaming fire his ministers." Think of that. When you create something, that becomes part of you. That becomes part of you. What have you created, Angela?
It's Frosty.
It's Frosty. Look at Frosty. Angela's created Frosty.
I wasn't dreaming of a white Christmas, but we got one. And so here's Frosty.
There's Frosty. So we have a creation. That's fine. Just keep the others two. Keep working as long as you want. We have creation here. She's created Frosty. Now look at it. Why are you smiling so big as I'm holding it?
Well, because I made it, and it reminds me of global warming. Elvis created one in front of the house, and he called it global warming.
Global warming. Ernie will love that. So you smile because this became part of you. This three balls of clay that she molded and sculpted has become part of Angela now. Can you imagine how God must feel as he looks at you and I? He didn't just take a little, he didn't get handed some Play-Doh and foam. He spoke. He did create it. He took the dust again. What does that say about God investment? Angela's face has been beaming ever since I've been holding up her creation. Because she's a part of this. She now has taken this and made it meaningful in her life. What more does our Heavenly Father experience when He looks upon us? He must think, and that's what David's describing here. Whoops, had a little problem here. Global warming, huh? So, what David is describing is his understanding of God and this creation and what the process has been. He goes on in chapter 104 and talks about, you know, I love this. He says, verse 2, it says, covering thyself with light as with a cloak. Light was his covering. Goes on there and the end of the chapter, it says, verse 31. Let the glory of the Lord endure forever. He looks at the earth and it trembles. He touches the mountain and they smoke. I will sing to the Lord as long as I live. I will sing praises to my God while I have my being. Let my meditation be pleasing to Him. As for me, I shall be glad in the Lord. He understood the experience of creation. He understood his own. He talked about, think of King David and all that he created. And yet, he kind of made understanding connection to God and what that is like for God. Angela's face was aglow as she saw her creation. What is God's face looking upon us? The second thing in the lesson we talked about was light. Talks about the firmament. I got this definition about light. Something that makes things visible or affords illumination. All colors depend on light. Isn't that fascinating? I mean, we know that, but when you hear it, it's fascinating. All color depends on light. Something that makes things visible or affords illumination. Now, as Ernie talked about last week, there's, you know, you could get a whole science lesson, or you could have a whole series on light and all the various things about it. But what's fascinating to me is more than that is, what does this represent about our God? How is our God revealing Himself and what He's created for us? You know, there's so many ways to understand this and to think about light. Would you look up John 8, 3 and through 12? You know, you think about all of us coming together here in Sabbath and the ritual of doing that. Jesus, in His creation experienced, created this universe for Adam and Eve. Created this thing. And then what did He do with them? He didn't say, okay, I'm done with you. I'll see you later. He came every evening. Every evening He came and was visited with them. Talked to them. Shared. Talked about the experiences. Go ahead.
One of the things I love about the creation of light, and we've already been able to divide the light from darkness. I love the fact that as soon as you permeate darkness with light, the darkness has to
disappears, doesn't it?
They cannot stand together. And the light will make your presence. It's a powerful concept.
It is. And you know what? We have darkness as an evil thing. But I wonder in the new creation, wonder what it was like. You know, Ernie talked last week about being camping one time, the two or three times he's gone, and one time he looked out and without any artificial lights and the brilliance of the stars. I wonder if you know, we have darkness associated, and there's many references to darkness and the devil and all of that. But I wonder if really darkness has a new different meaning than that. Go ahead.
Just wanted to say, when we were on vacation right in hometown, Raleigh, Maryland, my God, I saw stars like I hadn't seen since I left Colorado. Because if here in the city, there's so much light.
Oh, absolutely.
When we were there, it was like, I just felt like I could just reach out and touch. Names like, oh, I love conversations like that. I'm just naming all of them.
They're still here. Still here. Come on in. So that is exciting, isn't it, when you see that? So we have light. We have darkness. And you think about the light that was given and how God has been described as light. You think about the light that covered Adam and Eve. And the light that they was just part of their being. And then that recognition that they were naked after they ate the fruit. That's such a dramatic thing of they were in the light and all of a sudden they recognized they were naked. And then the question is, who told you were naked? Who told you? They had lost something. They had lost something. They had lost quite a bit, absolutely. So when you think of light and creation, it's really exciting to think about how those things work together. And what's fascinating to me, and as we're going to read here in John, that the earth was at the darkest points it ever was when Jesus came to this earth. There had been so many misinformation about God and His character. They were some of the best Bible keepers, the best Sabbath keepers around during that time period. But they had lost the light. They had lost the understanding. You know, you think about God creating. And in God creating this universe for us, this world, it was for us to enjoy, for us to understand and develop more knowledge of Him. And yet it became something where we just started to interject our own ideas of God. We started to lose sight of who God really is. You know, we nothing seemed to matter. You know, one of the most interesting things in working with foster kids like I do is some of these foster parents, these kids never seem to be upset the fact that they're running off and they're doing all these crazy things. I said, you're right. Nothing matters. Relationships don't matter. So when you sit there and you say, well, I would have never done that because my parents would have. What does that say is you had a relationship. You had something that mattered to you in that. And you didn't want that stern voice of your parents or that stern whatever look. Because that relationship mattered, you then altered your behavior. These foster kids, nothing matters. They have had, you know, all kinds of life experiences that have told them, it doesn't matter. It doesn't, just do whatever you can to reduce, to keep yourself in a hyper-vigilant state. Keep yourself in a hyper state, because that's where they were felt the safest. So, it's real important to realize Jesus came at a time where God really didn't matter to the people. It was more about what you do and don't do. It was more about how you do this and who's in and who's out. It was more about something else. And it wasn't about the relationship. So when we think of light, and we're going to read here in John, what's Jesus' purpose? Go ahead, start reading there, Ron. John 8, verse 3, starting with verse 3.
While he was teaching, the scribes and the Pharisees dragged in a prostitute whom they had tricked into adultery. So they could use her to confront Jesus. They pushed her toward him and said, Master, this woman was caught in the act of committing adultery. What should we do with her?
Okay, let's stop right there. What do you hear so far? What part of the story's grabbed you?
Accusation.
They tricked. They were looking to get him. They were looking to get him cornered. They were looking to get him in a position where there was no good answer. Many times parents do that with kids. Did you take that out of the cookie jar? While there's, you know, chocolate on their face. And did you take that out? What's the good answer? No, I didn't do that. You know, why do parents do that? Why do they ask them a question that's so obvious? Well, I just want to see if they tell the truth. Ah, more effective to say, oh, looks like you've been in the cookie jar. Let's see what we're going to need to do about this. What a difference. What a difference. So they came to Jesus and they were trying to say, oh, we're going to find out how you're going to answer this question. We're going to do it. And they had set this woman up to be caught in adultery. It wasn't just a matter of they orchestrated. This was an orchestrated theatrical event. And they were going to find out how Jesus was going to answer the all-important question. And they even pulled in a little authority. Well, according to Moses' law, Moses can't go against Moses here now. Isn't that interesting how that works? They want to get him trapped. Then they're going to quote authority. And now we're going to see what you're going to do. Let's hear what he says.
So they asked her, what should we do with her? Moses told us that such a person should be stoned to death. What do you say? They did this to trap him in his own words so they could arrest him without causing a riot.
So they already had their agenda plan. They knew they had everything scripted. And this was the time period that the earth was in. They already had everything scripted. The Jews knew who were the saved and not saved. They were just trying to keep themselves pure. But they didn't have a relationship with God. And that's why Jesus came into this earth. Go ahead.
Notice that
it
didn't drag any man in.
Didn't drag the man in. Didn't drag the man in, did it? Go ahead.
One of the things that's interesting, looking at the time when Christ came and back to creation, it talks about let there be light. And we tend to put darkness as an entity, but darkness is just the absence of light.
Absence of light, that's true.
And when we look at the earth and now form of the Lord and God showed light onto the earth, then you go back to when Christ came. They were doing everything right.
They were doing it all right.
They were in darkness.
They were in darkness.
Absolute Christ's presence and absolute
right.
God's mother.
Absolutely.
They were doing it right.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Go ahead, Ron.
But Jesus ignored this question. He leaned forward and with his fingers started writing something in the dust.
And you know, I want to stop right there a minute. Sometimes it's better to ignore something. Sometimes it's better just to not even give an answer. Because you know, any way you're going to answer, you're going to be trapped. You're going to be trapped. It's like, there's no good answer. You're going to be trapped. Jesus was a master psychologist. I can tell you that. He was a master at it. Go ahead. Why? Because he created humans. He should have been. He understood. Go ahead. You were going to say, make a comment.
I have a quote on my desk that I found somewhere that said, silence cannot be misquoted.
Silence cannot be misquoted. Silence cannot be misquoted. Absolutely. Silence cannot be misquoted. And in those moments of silence, we also have moments of reflection, too. And that's a powerful thing. It really is. Go ahead.
So they kept asking him what he thought they should do with this woman. Finally, he straightened up, looked at them, and said, any one of you who has never sinned, let him throw the first stone. Then he leaned forward and started writing again. This time, the leaders looked at what he was doing, and he saw traced before them their own secret sins, their part in trapping the woman.
Wow. What a beautiful recognition of how he responded to that. He didn't expose them, but he the accusers, but he also stimulated them to look at inside. I think that's really sometimes the key in silence, is it gives us an opportunity to reflect inwardly. What's going on in here? What's happening in here? Go ahead.
So one by one, convinced of their own sins, they quietly left, beginning with the older ones. Until they were all gone, only Jesus and the woman were left. Then Jesus straightened up and said to the woman who was still trembling in fear, expecting to hear her sentence of doom, "Where are all those who were accusing you? It looks like they've gone. There's no one here to condemn you." She looked around and said, "You're right, Lord, there's not a one." And Jesus responded, "Neither am I going to condemn you. You are forgiven. You may go now, but leave your life of sin." He turned to the crowd which had been watching and said, "I am the light of the world, and the person who follows me will no longer have to feel his way through the darkness, but will be able to walk in the future with certainty because he is following the light."
"I am the light of the world," he said. What was the light he came to reveal? The light that was originally created for each one of us was God's love. Was God's love in everything he created. And he's now saying, "I've come back to bring you back to the truth. I am the light of the world." Great, you had something else you were going to read?
No, okay,
just read. But you know, it's fascinating. "I am the light of the world," he said. He came back to restore the light that had been almost extinguished by the civilization of that time. He had done everything he could to work over the history of the world, and now Jesus himself came to reveal his Father's love. When you think about Jesus being the light of the world, and then you think about God creating light, what a wonderful connection there. Go ahead.
I'm trying to find how to put the question in a way that you will make me understand the answer.
I was about to say, in a way I want you to answer. Go ahead.
The light just make me get it right. The light that God gives it is not the light that has the speed that we can say the speed of light. I was going to get mixed up there because I can see that this light came in the second chapter of creation. I mean the second verse. And I can see light in the fourth day of the sun, the moon, the stars there. So I see two lights.
And what I'm attempting to do is to bring them both together as one's a physical reality, one's a spiritual reality, and both have interconnection. You think about, someone said there's no such thing as darkness, there's just absence of light. Think about that in our own spiritual world. You know, the evilness is the absence of God in our life. It's the absence of light. And you think about the physical creation of light, you know, and I've got the statistics about the, let's see, electromagnetic, radiant energy or luminous energy is electromagnetic radiation to which the organs of sight react, ranging in wavelength from about 400 to 700 nm. I don't know what that means. Probably some engineer minder. And propagated at a speed of 186,282 miles per second. Now, those are some physical realities. But you think about a dynamic being, God, creating that light, and then Jesus Christ coming back to become the light. To me, they're interwoven. Now, I don't, not trying to say, oh, there's the God's, that's God in light when I see light. But God's in everything that he's created. Angela when she created. This was in. This became part of her. What did you create?
This is my mom.
This is her mom.
I want her to clean
this out. This was her mom she created. Now, you look at that in general and say, oh, that's just... But now it mean, has meaning because it's her mom coming to Sabbath school. Look at how that has meaning now. And I guess that's what I'm trying to stimulate you to realize is that we look at these things of creation, they have meaning if we understand God and His love for each one of us. If we look at it just as a physical reality, like of the things I read, it's just a kind of a interesting phenomena. But if we put meaning to it behind understanding God and His love, go ahead.
I don't know, but maybe the logic in me, I almost envision that the reason the earth was without form and void, and God said, "Let there be light," He could see in the darkness because He could see everything.
Mm-hmm.
I just rationalize it, so I feel like that it's the creation started that way, so that our logical minds could have a beginning. You know, God could see in the darkness, but we have to rationalize things, and I believe in order to go forward from there. When the rest of creation came, we want to know that it was void, without form.
Mm-hmm.
And God said, "Let me go. Let there be light." Mm-hmm. And light appeared. And it wasn't then the sun, you know, and the light that travels as children 1,000 miles. It's not that light. It was just we can see now.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, let's start here.
Mm-hmm.
I, that's just my own interpretation. I think we need a place to start.
I think absolutely. We're dealing with infinite mind, and as finite minds, we're trying to deal with infinite, and we need some orientation. In John last night, we were reading in Revelation, and as I was going home with my mother, she said to me, "You know, it's hard to even imagine John trying to describe these things he saw, and he always related to things he knew." The Old Testament is scattered throughout Revelation. And why is it? Because that's what John's orientation was. So we were trying to deal with something that I'm not even sure we can grasp totally, but it's a starting point. Go ahead.
One thing, I guess a couple of weeks ago, and I've read through this over and over and over again, but in relationship to creation,
mm-hmm.
life, mm-hmm. was I was reading John 1:2 said, He was in the beginning. He was with God in the beginning. All things were created through Him. And apart from Him, not one thing was created that was with Him. Life was in Him, and that life was the light of man.
Mm-hmm.
That light shined in the darkness. And I thought about it. Oh, okay, this He was light. So mm-hmm. when He said, "Let there be light," let there be this condition where life now can exist.
Mm-hmm.
And that's Christ showing the involvement of God in our creation.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Absolutely.
That was so totally, to me, different from the sun, moon, and the stars.
Mm-hmm.
This was something with God's actual involvement here as the creator.
Active involvement, and He's as active involved in this world as He's ever been. And that, to me, is a very critical principle to recognize. It wasn't a, oh, let's go over here and create this and then put it in my garage and move on. It was, this is part of my experience. Go ahead.
Well, I'm thinking that in God's universe, before formed this earth, wherever that is, in the far, far heavens, it's a place we understand to be light. There is no night.
Mm-hmm.
So God lives, I'm assuming, was living in an environment of this light and joy and everything. And in His master plan, He knew that down here on the day such and such, in this 7-day cycle, He's going to create a being in His image. So if God lives in light in the master heaven, isn't it only logical that His being created would also need some form of light.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's only three or four when you develop the cycles
mm-hmm.
of sun, moon, and
stars. Right.
But initially, the first day, from the void, it was like a master power switch. It turned
boom.
On the light, and then turned it off in
mm-hmm.
the star.
Mm-hmm.
And then later is when he put it into the cycles.
Mm-hmm.
The other interesting thing is the proximity of putting this earth and we people proximity to the sun.
Mm-hmm.
Not too close, not too hot. So just maintain an environment.
It's phenomenal when you think about it. And it boggles our mind to understand how that could we ever believe that our God doesn't love us. But we can get so caught in what we think is the rudimentary things that we're supposed to do for Him to love us, and we miss the whole point. And I guess that to me, that's the exciting part. And I think that's what the exciting, as Ernie talked last week, about what is God creating in each one of us. What is God creating? What is His... David says, created me a new heart, oh God. He understood that experience. That was... He understood that dynamic experience that was ongoing. And I think that's the exciting thing. What have you created back there? Show it to me.
A star.
A star. Let me take your star. Here's His star. Look at His face. Look at His face. Why are you smiling so big?
Well, I mean, when I got that, I thought of making a ball, but then the color as well must be star. So
something happens to us when we're involved in creating. I don't care if it's an idea, if it's a physical structure, if it's a star out of Play-Doh. Something happens to us. Imagine what happened to God in His creation of this world, of each of us. Imagine what happened to Him.
I think that's why God decided that we would procreate. He could have made everybody. Then He made two and started there.
Absolutely.
And because of what it does to us.
Absolutely. What it does to us. Absolutely. Go ahead.
Yes, I'm probably part of your family. I was thinking that our gift from God is to see the cycle of life. You know, as we age and we have children and then grandchildren,
mm-hmm.
it just reignites our love of God and the mind-boggling creation. Sustainment.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. In the midst of the craziness in this world, you know, you lose one family member and, you know, you get the next generation.
Mm-hmm.
And it just let us know, you know what, to live is Christ, to die is gain. I am going to die
mm-hmm.
today, but I'm going to be risen. I'll see my Savior, and then I'll see my loved one.
Mm-hmm.
Love all that.
Absolutely. You going back to that story we read in John there. That woman, what was her experience of understanding forgiveness? What was created anew in her? What light did she see as a result of that? That is what each one of us have that opportunity to experience. That freedom, that sense of acceptance, that sense of I don't accuse you either. And when you think about that kind of light, when you think about that understanding, and we're talking about Jesus said, I'm the light of the world. To me, that's an understanding. When you think of that, it's going to create a sense of freedom. And in that sense of freedom, we then can become creative. We then can become a dynamic, a part of this creative process. You know, and years ago at the where I'm the director, our name was the Family Counseling Center, and then we called it. Then we thought we needed to change the name, so we kept it Center for Creative Living. The creative experience is each one of us creating a new experience in light of the fact that we are forgiven, in light of the fact that God loves us, in light of the fact that He is there, and He, through Him, we have an opportunity to live an exciting, free life. You know, so that to me is exciting, is we're in that creative process. Each one of our volunteers, their faces, when I held up their creation, became alive because that was part of them. Can you imagine the experience when God embraces all of us in heaven? Can you imagine the experience when Jesus Christ comes to this earth and says, okay, let's go up here where we can have a more complete, more full relationship, where we can don't have to see through a glass darkly, where you'll have the eternity to start understanding my infinite mind. See, and I already have to put it into a reference, infinite mind. Well, infinite, let me understand infinite. We'll have eternity to understand that. Because we keep looking for reference points. As humans, I think as you very appropriately said, we're looking for a point of knowing where to start. We're looking for a point of knowing where to have some point. But if that starting point doesn't lead us to understand God's love, then I think we've missed the whole point. The Jewish people had all the correct understanding of some of the biblical things, but they lost the relationship with God. And what a tragedy. What a tragedy. Okay. Okay. I'll read this out loud here. And then if you want one of these, this is Betty Quebecca is in room 314 at Arlington Medical Center at the intersection of Matlock and Mansfield Street in Arlington. Please pray for her. She's been there for 4 days with complications and will probably be there 2 more days. So if any of you are interested in taking this, so you'll keep this person in prayer. This is, you know, we talk about the light, but then there's also a reference of we are the lights. Well, truthfully, we're really a reflection. We're a reflection of God's love that then gets bent and has new understanding to the people. So I think the exciting thing to me in understanding this is how do we become light? How do we embrace the light? And to me, the greatest thing is understanding Jesus Christ and the light He came to offer to the dark world. He came to help the people understand what creation was about as far as God's love. Adam and Eve didn't need to know that until they chose to separate themselves from God. They knew that, and it was part of their being. They had that ongoing relationship. When I go to these foster kids, they don't know me. They don't care who I am. They don't. All they know is, what do you got for me? And most of the time, every kid wants to say, well, can I keep this? I don't have this. What are they saying is, I feel deprived. I need this, and I won't feel this way. And I simply say, this is for everyone, and I'll get back to play with you again. There's an ongoing relationship.
Can you tell us the name of the person?
Becky Quebecca?
Betty.
Oh, Betty. Betty. Betty Quebecca. Can't turn on dark.
Why are we just
still trying to wipe sweat off the dirt. So,
that's a good thought. Shall we bow our heads in prayer? Dear God, we're so grateful that in this process of looking at your Son, that we have more understanding of your light. We're more so grateful that we can come to recognize how much you love us and care for us. And we want to know how to take that into our being every day so that we can become more radiant lights in this world where darkness prevails. Thank you for this Sabbath day and for everyone here. We think of Betty Quebecca and her situation. We think about her and we want your presence to be there with her as well as here. Thank you for this Sabbath day. In Jesus' name, amen.